You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are continuing our series today with Dr. Bierman as we take a look at his book, Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. Looking forward to continuing that conversation because today we get to talk about work.
Yes.
Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul by visiting csp.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman. He is a professor of theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. Dr. Bierman, welcome back.
Great to be here.
All right, today, Chapter 3.
Yep.
We're talking about work.
Yeah. At last.
Yes. The phrase Protestant work ethic comes up.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. How does it affect what we consider work to be?
It's hugely significant. Work is fascinating. And let me just riff on this a little bit. You know, we think about work and it's just, oh, we just grind it out. You just do it. It's just part of life. And we don't think much about it. But I have taught this class at the seminary at a grad level on work and art. And it's going to morph into just all art. But it was work has done its job for me. But the work part, you would not believe how complicated work is theologically. You think, what is that? You're making everything complicated. No, it's just fascinating. You know, what's work all about? And so the Protestants have just made this, you know, this whole idea of work. You know, you're here to work, 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 work. And man, has that shaped America? Yeah. Has it shaped even our Lutheran ethos? Hugely. You know, most of us grew up in that kind of a solid conservative work before play, do your homework first, and you can play, you know, this kind of stuff. And you know, if you're not doing something productive, what are you accomplishing? And it's just this whole work ethic that just drives us as Americans. And I think it drives us as even in our Lutheran psyche as part of how we operate. And it's huge.
Where did this come from?
Yeah. Where it came from is, I think, the idea, partly this idea of vocation, partly the idea of, you know, what we're here for, and part of, frankly, the creation account. So there's a right place for work and a right way to think about work. And this is why it gets delicate about this topic, because we can criticize our overwork, which is rightly to be criticized, and we can criticize our obsession with work in our culture. And I'll say more about that next week when we get to Joseph Pieper, when we start talking about leisure and his criticism. His critique. But the point now is to recognize that work can become a problem. But at the same time, work is kind of essential to what we are as human beings. And this is the argument I think is core to really getting things straight, is to realize we are made to work. And so there's truth to the need to work. That's right. But we can so quickly abuse it and so easily mess it up.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that Protestant work ethic, this has kind of defined our American identities.
Yeah.
What is this therapeutic cultural mindset? How do those play together?
All right. So we're talking about kind of the broad cultural kinds of things, which I'm exceedingly interested in.
Oh, yes.
What we call cultural sociology. And I want to be clear on this. I find this fascinating. I'm not a big fan of little micro sociology, doing studies on, you know, why people do the things they do. But I'm really interested in cultural sociological kinds of things. And you can see in America, this kind of sweep of how things work. A guy named Philip Reif was a sociologist, late 20th century. He talked about how man was economic man for a good chunk of time, where man was basically here to work. We evaluated things based on our productivity, what we got accomplished, how well we did things, and we judged the worth of somebody by what they got done. And that's still very dominant in our culture. But what started happening in the late 20th century, and has really come very prominently to the play, is what he says is now economic man has been replaced by psychological man, where man is no longer here to work and accomplish, but man is here to be pleased. And we're in this kind of a transition time where now we have this a therapeutic culture, is what he called it, where everybody wants to feel good. They want to have therapy. And so now we have this kind of strange thing where you work so that you can have time to rest and play and do the things you want to do. And so it's a convoluted sort of a time. And whether how this will all shake out, we'll see. The pandemic really brought, you know, this to the forefront where people are saying, I don't want to work anymore. I can't work. Well, great. I'm not going to. And they reevaluated and he had this, all this people are talking about work has gone away. No, everybody just wants to enjoy things, but work's now coming back and people are realizing there's more to this. But there's a definite interplay here between what it means to be human and what we're here for and how this all fits and where does work fit.
Quiet quitting. That was a thing.
Yeah, quiet quitting. Right. And why? Because I've got better things to do than waste my life working.
Yeah, but some aren't so quiet.
Well, that's an issue. Yeah.
Okay.
I want to go back. I think you used the phrase, we are made to work, right?
Yes.
How is this affected by the fall?
Let's go back to Genesis again. Yes. And so much comes out of the first three chapters of Genesis. Mm-hmm. They're just normative for our anthropology, for what it means to be human, for our lives here. And so in Genesis, you have God creating Adam and Eve on day six. And why are they created? To take care of the garden. And the second creation account in Genesis 2, you have God creating man first, planting a garden, putting Adam there to do what? Take care of it. So man is created to take care of creation. That's what we're here for. We're here to be God's stewards. That's our job. And I would even argue that the image of God is less to do with my rationality or my relationality, but has to do with my responsibility as God's representative in the creation. That's what I'm here for. So I'm built to work. And I would argue that this is not just an add-on to my human being, that, oh, while you're here, do some work, make yourself useful. But I would say that we are wired for it. This is part of our, and I'll go as far as to say, this is part of our inherent, intrinsic, substantive reality of what it means to be human. Humans are made to work. It's what we're here for. And that's why work feels right for us, even though it's hard. But see, that's the curse. And you brought this up. So what does the curse do? Well, the curse takes this good thing that we're made for and makes it unpleasant and makes it a drag. And that's what curses do. And this is how all the Genesis 3 curses work. You have this good thing like childbirth, bringing new life, awesome, but now it's full of pain, not so much fun. You have man built to work. Now you got thorns and thistles, not so much fun. You're going to go work by the sweat of your brow. It's going to kill you, but you can't not do it. And this is this kind of twofold reality I think we experience all the time in our lives. We hate work and we complain about it, but if we don't have anything to do, we're bored and we feel listless. And if you want to really drive a guy crazy, just take his job away and he loses his identity. It's core to who we are.
Mm-hmm. Let's dig more into that. What does it mean that work is part of what it means to be human? How does that play out in our daily lives and how we just function?
No, that's why this is all relevant for real life. And see, part of what I want to get at here is I want us to recognize that the work we do is not just accidental to my being, but it's kind of what I'm here for. And this should transform how we look at our work. And it doesn't mean you have to be doing great, awesome things. You can be changing diapers, mowing lawns. You can be running a radio show. You can be doing whatever.
Oh, that's work?
Oh.
It is.
Allegedly.
Work. We'll discuss that more when we get to my chapter on play. And we'll make distinction between work and play. That's coming.
Uh-oh.
But no, that's part of the complication. You see, a definition for work runs about four lines usually, at least in text. It's, I've seen them run eight lines, a whole paragraph to define work. Seriously. Because it gets super complicated trying to figure this all out. But the bottom line, though, to answer your question, Sarah, is that what we're getting at here is that work is part of my very being. In other words, I'm made for this. And we, like I said, we get a sense for that. When you do a job and you've worked hard, you have that sense of satisfaction. And I talked about God delighting on the seventh day. Well, it's like you delight after you've mowed the lawn. And you're walking across the line, and you look at those stripes.
Oh, those nice diagonal stripes.
Exactly. And it was work, and you're glad it's done, but man, isn't that, you get that. Yeah. Or the whole kit. Full disclosure, I love doing dishes, which is a weird thing, but I just do. I find a great delight in this. My wife cooks like crazy. She's an awesome cook, bakes, does all this stuff, and she'll just put the dishes on the counter, and she knows I'll come in, and I swoop in, and I love to do them because I find this profound satisfaction of just getting everything cleared away. And the counters are clear. And it's like, yes. And I think that's part of that wired for work. And you have different things. She loves to do the baking. I have no interest in that, but I'll do my thing. And so there's that sense of satisfaction. And that's part of that wired into us. We are made for it. And we know it in our guts.
Are there different categories?
Yeah, there's the kind of work that you do to get paid. There's the work you do to survive. There's the work that just has to be done just to survive. A guy I learned from a long time ago wrote a book about human life and about how life is boring and how it's a good thing. And he was defending boredom as he talks in there about how human bodies just take a lot of work. You got to keep them clean. You got to keep them fed. And cleaning your body and keeping it fed and taking care of you, it just takes work. Every day. And if you got kids in the mix, it's even more. You just, all the stuff you got to do. And that's okay. And so there's that kind of mundane work. And yet, even that's part of what it means to be human. And see, looking even, I even like tasks, you know, brushing your teeth and shaving and all that. Oh, I hate wasting my time on this stuff. No, you learn to say, no, this is part of what it means to be human. This is what it means to work.
So is there value in considering the different types of work that we do?
There is. It's helpful. But on the other hand, I think we maybe work too hard trying to decide what qualifies as work and what's real work and what's not work. And maybe it's better to just simply think about what I'm doing for the sake of getting an outcome. And that's going to be, we'll get to this more when we talk about play. But what really defines work is trying to accomplish something. It's purposeful. It has an outcome. I brush my teeth so they're clean and I don't have lousy breath. So I don't lose my teeth. I don't pay fortunes at the dentist. I brush my teeth for a reason. I work at my job for a reason. And so you joke about, well, this is play. I'm enjoying this. Yeah, but you're still getting paid and people are still depending on you bringing that paycheck. You have a vocation responsibility. And so you're working for a purpose. So work is purposeful. Even if you enjoy it, it's still purposeful. And see, work doesn't have to be a drag to be work. It's purposeful. I love what I do too. And you think you got a great gig. Mine's even better. I love.
Well, this is the easy part, right?
I know.
Behind the scenes.
You can spend how many hours editing all this junk and cleaning it all up.
So many hours.
Yes. So burdensome. But you see, the point is not, is it hard or did I sweat or is it physical labor, is it manual labor? The point is, am I doing this for an outcome beyond just the thing itself? Is there a purpose to it? You know, am I trying to produce something? That becomes a big part of it. And we are meant to be purposeful. We are meant to be productive. That's what it means to be human. We're meant to get things done.
Back to telos.
Yes.
Hey.
And see, this is the big part of this. So back to telos. So is work and being a worker part of my human telos? And I would say yes. Not all of it. That's where you problem with the Weber Protestant work ethic. And that's where it just becomes all I am here to do is work. No. There's more to it than that, but that's a big part of it.
We're talking with Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman, author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth. Who am I? How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we're talking with Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman in our series on Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. We are talking about work today. And this is work, right? This is our job. We tell stories. We share stories.
Work at work. Yeah.
We invite guests to tell stories. And today we're talking about work. What about the relationship between work and Sabbath? Are they polar opposites?
That's where this all kind of runs. And this will get even more complicated when we do next week in leisure, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, Sarah. I love complicated.
Yeah, no, it throws a whole wrinkle into all this. I mentioned this class I taught. This is what kind of was part of the impetus for this book. But are they polar opposites? And the quick answer is no. And that's kind of the point. See, if we get Sabbath understood as living rightly related and in a proper relationship with God and with other creatures, then Sabbath isn't just about knocking off from work. And work becomes almost incidental to it. So work becomes, as I mentioned, sort of the what we call positive law, the thing you need to do aspect of the natural law reality of I want you to live in tune. So God says, so don't work to make sure you're living in tune. But for us, the bigger point is, are you living rightly related? Are you delighting? Are you celebrating? Are you living in this kind of relationship? And I would say that's what Sabbath is about. So that's part of it. Then I think about, well, my work is what I'm made for. Was Adam working before the fall? Yes. Mm-hmm. There was a garden to take care of. Mm-hmm. And had the fall not happened, would Adam and Eve been working, raising kids, establishing a home, taking care of the garden? Yeah, you got to prune stuff. You got to plant stuff. Got to cultivate it. And see, then the cultivation of creation, that's a whole other aspect, is a part of man's job. And this is interesting, this little sidebar here, is you have this notion of, you know, pristine wilderness, that's the best. And then man comes along and ruins it by paving it, you know, whatever. And, oh, you know, you've ruined it. But in the biblical account, man is here to take the creation and to cultivate it, make something of it, and bring it to a new kind of thing. So plant a garden, make rows, make hedges, make walkways. It's better now. It's better now than just being a pristine. We've got to recalibrate how we think about all this. So anyway, so we are here living in tune with the creation and with the creator. And what does it mean to live in tune? It means you're doing what you're supposed to do. What are we supposed to do? Work. And so Sabbath work was one of my working titles for this book. And I was, those don't go together, but they do. They belong completely together. So I can work in a Sabbath way and I can do Sabbath in a work context. They're not antithetical. They belong together.
Does that mean work is a gift?
Absolutely, it is. Yeah. No, it is. It's a gift. Yeah. But it is. This is part of God's gifting to you. And this gets into we talked about this earlier, weeks ago, about the meaninglessness of life and the purposelessness and having a telos. Well, the gift of having a telos is huge. And so when God gives you work to do, what a blessing. And people get retired and they go bonkers because they lose their telos. They lose their purpose. And you have a gift. You know what you're here for.
How does that shift how we think about work and the mundane and the stuff that we have to do?
Yeah. And I'm saying you have to be a Pollyanna and smile while you're doing everything. I'm so happy, cleaning this toilet. This is my favorite job. There are jobs I hate. And I've learned to do them anyway, and it just needs to be done.
But it's not dishes because he likes that.
I like doing dishes, but I don't like cleaning bathrooms.
That's
so marked difference. But you do what needs to be done. And so you just dig in and sometimes you need to do it. But so you don't have to be a Pollyanna, it's all good. And I just love this. No, sometimes you just crank through it and get it done. But you learn to see work as part of what it means to be human. Now, this is not also to try to act like, all work is awesome. It's not. Yeah. Some work is really hard. And we live in a culture in the Western world where a lot of work is often not too demanding. Not physically demanding. It's not going to literally kill us. But work for a lot of people is still that way. I think about the couple hundred years ago working on a farm, that was demanding. People died young for a reason. And so work can often be really, really difficult. That's part of the curse. And so I'm not trying to sugarcoat and act like, you just are lucky, you've got a great job. I count that as a huge gift. I know I've got it. I thank God all the time for that. And yet, even the hard work and even that kind of mundane stuff and even that work that can kill you, even that is, God has given me this task. I'll do it. I'll dig this hole. I'll clean this bathroom. I'll mine this coal. I'm going to do what God has given me to do, and I'm going to do it for the sake of those around me, for the other creatures around me who are depending on me. And see, this is the whole point of work. It's for the sake of the creation. I work for the good of the creation. I cultivate it. And whatever work I do is helping that creation become better.
I will say that the day that I realized that thinking actually uses calories.
I never really,
your brain is a calorie hog.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we don't really think of that, but actual thinking requires calories.
It does.
Yep.
It does.
And when I realized that, I won't say when in my life I realized that.
Was it yesterday?
But when I realized that, that did change how I perceive work and the place of thinking in work.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely a place for thinking as work. And we'll explore that more next week, making a distinction between work and thinking and contemplation. But thinking, yes, you can do mental work, no doubt about it.
Okay. Here's a fun one. All right. Will work be part of the new creation?
Yeah. And this usually blows people's mind. That's why I love talking about this one.
Because we only think of work in drudgery sort of thing.
Exactly. Right? Mm-hmm. We can't wait for Friday, can't wait for the weekend, can't wait for the day off. And, vacation is here. This is awesome. And we, think about retirement. Oh, I don't have to work anymore. And yet I will argue that retirement without work is really pointless. You're missing the whole point, but that's another time. We can maybe do that one next. But so what about the new creation? Well, you see, this is what's fascinating. If our humanity is grounded in being a worker as part of my intrinsic humanness, that means that when I am resurrected and I am fully human as God planned it, will I be a worker? And I would say, of course. That's what God made me for. And I'll be a worker as God intended, like Adam and Eve were. And where will I be working? It's a new creation, new heavens and a new earth. And so we'll be spending, I believe, eternity in the new creation in the God's kingdom, caring for his creation, his good creation. We are material beings. We always will be. And if you are still suspicious about materiality, remember that Jesus was incarnate. Christ became incarnate. Jesus has a body for eternity. And that's really mind-blowing, that God joined himself to humanity for eternity. And so materiality can't ever be a negative. And so we will be resurrected with real human bodies in a real creation. And what are we going to do? Take care of it. Mm-hmm. And work. Will it be a drag or a drudgery? Well, no. It'll be a delight, as it should be. And that's kind of cool to think about. And it like shifts so many things, you know. So instead of, and I'll joke about this with my students, you know, when I reach the pearly gates at the resurrection, will I be handed my harp and go stand there for the choir, you know, joining the never-ending church service? Yikes. You know, it might sound impious, but in a church service that never ends, come on. I don't care how pious you are. It needs to come to an end at some point. Because otherwise, how long can you do this? And but the idea of the work comes in. So I don't think I'll get a harp. I think I'll be given a nice, good push lawnmower and a good swath of bluegrass and said, there you go. Take care of it. I'm on for that.
Straight or diagonal?
Oh, it'll be diagonal on some days. Then the other day you cut it the other direction, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's right. But diagonals are the best, yeah.
Apparently we need a companion episode about how to mow a lawn.
Andy knows this. There is a right way and a wrong way to go about it.
Oh, I've been informed.
And cutting circles around things, you don't do it that way. It takes a lot longer to cut the diagonals, but it's worth it.
I love this so much. This is a theme.
In a new series with Dr. Bierman on how to mow the lawn and do the dishes.
It's true. Oh, happy hobbies. I got to bring that back. Mowing the lawn.
That's right.
Before we run out of time, we got to talk about vocation because we're talking about work. What is vocation? Yeah. Is it the same thing as work? How does Luther understand it?
Yeah. Vocation, it was one of Luther's huge gifts to the church. It was lost. Vocation in Luther's day meant becoming a priest or becoming a monk. That now I've got a vocation, a calling from God. Luther recognized that a calling, which is what vocation means, literally is Latin for calling. A vocation is a calling from God, and it's based on where God puts you. So your vocation begins the moment you're born. You're a child born into a family, and you have a vocation now as a son or a daughter. And then your vocations change. You marry, you get friends, you take a job. And so your vocations, we all have lots of them. Vocation doesn't mean what you get paid to do. It's not your career. Your vocations, and they always come in plurals, are your responsibilities in your relationships with those around you. They come from God, and we work in them. So the place that I do my work is in those vocations, and this is a critical thing. I do my work not for God, but for my neighbor, for those in the around me, in my relationships. That's what I do vocations for.
All right. What do we have to look forward to next time?
Next time is the most beguiling of all the topics, and that's the topic of leisure. We all think we know what it means, but I'm going to introduce a whole new way of looking at this based on a guy named Joseph Pieper. So that's next week.
So excited.
Because you haven't thrown us off on anything.
Not at all.
The big stuff's coming.
Our guest for this series, the Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman, author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. Dr. Bierman, thanks for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.